And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Friday, July 8th. Derek Van Riper here with Keith Law. On this episode, we will discuss the first part of the futures game rosters that have been released. They're coming out eight players at a time right now. So we'll talk about the first eight players that we know are going to be a part of that game during the All-Star weekend festivities. We'll talk about the Red Sox young pitching following the debut of Brian Bello earlier this week. They've had a few other sort of prospects that have been chewing up some innings in the first half. We'll dig into whether or not those guys could be viable contributors in some capacity over the course of the second half. And we're going to dig into the barrel rate of Wander Franco. Is that something that really changes who we think he's going to become as a player in the long run? So those topics, and I'm sure a few others along the way. And Keith, I imagine you're excited that the futures game is just around the corner, because that means the draft is just around the corner, and it means that your workload changes dramatically after that point. And this build-up to both of these events is kind of a lot to have overlapping at the same time.
Wait, the draft is coming up?
Apparently.
Jeez. I just thought they'd pushed it back to September at this point. Actually, I feel okay about it. As you know, I had Eric Loggenhagen on my podcast this week, The Keith Law Show, the cleverly titled The Keith Law Show. And we were also joking about how it's kind of staring us in the face, but I feel like after 2 years of us not having regular cycles, right? We had the pandemic year draft, and then 2021 was very much impacted by the lack of a regular summer and fall in the 12 months leading up to that draft. I felt not great about it. This year, yeah, I'm sure some team in the back of the first round is going to shock everyone, pull some name from outside of my top 100, some Tyler Locklear type or somebody like that. But I feel prepared again, which is weird after 2 years of never really feeling all that prepared. But I've been through my list. I've talked to people. I got to do that again later today, back on the phone after a few days of doing other stuff. I've got my capsules written for my entire top 100. I'm okay. I'm kind of ready. Now I'm ready. Like the draft, they can do the draft now. I approve. I do like I'm also very grateful. The draft should be 2 weeks earlier than it is, but at least it's not right after the futures game, because that 24 hours last year sucked. Personally, this is entirely about me. I got off a plane in Denver and basically, you know, dropped at the hotel, went right to the ballpark, watched the futures game, went back to the hotel to shower because I was disgusting after sitting in the sun. Put on nicer clothes also and walked over to the draft in the convention center because the first round was that night. That was all one day. And the next morning, I had no time to recover. I'd been writing two separate pieces Sunday night. I had no time to recover and had to roll right into the next part of the draft. So at least this year, futures game is Saturday. Draft starts Sunday. And so now I'll only be writing one thing Sunday night and could actually do something else on Monday morning while we wait for rounds 2 through 10 to start. So if nothing else, they've at least separated those things. So the five of us who actively cover both events can get a real night's sleep, baby.
Well, I think it's also just good from a consumer perspective, right? If you want to read about these events or watch events,
too.
You can spread that out a little bit and have your fun over a couple of days instead of trying to cram it all into one day.
Yeah.
So
it is like, prospect the Palooza, right? They're trying to, right? This is all the prospect stuff. You care about prospects. Here's arguably the two biggest individual events days maybe in the prospect calendar. I mean, there are other things that matter that people care about, like fall league, but that's not one day. Here are the two biggest things there in one weekend. I think that's the idea. I still think they're kind of missing the boat with the draft. Now having the draft so far after everyone stopped playing, that's no better to me. Like doing it, the idea had been floated that they would maybe even do it in Omaha and do it right as the College World Series was ending, or I guess this year the College World Series was what, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but it used to be pretty consistently a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday if necessary. So they could have done the draft like Sunday, Monday, something like that, mm-hmm. where no, these guys are still playing. You've just watched some of these players and now some of them are going to get drafted. I like that because also by that point, everyone else is done. Just about all the high schools are done. All the other colleges are done. That made more sense to me. Now we have this sort of weird 2 week gap, almost 3 week gap between the last of these players actually playing and the draft itself. And I don't think that helps in terms of, you know, because we don't have the player recognition that the NBA and the NFL have that make their drafts much more like properties in their own right in terms of people actively watching because they know those players, right? If they've watched college basketball, college football, they know a huge chunk of those players. In the NBA, obviously, there's players coming in internationally. I don't know how what kind of name recognition they might have, but both those leagues are way ahead of Major League Baseball and always will be. So we have to think a little bit differently about how to market the draft, which is always going to be a little bit of a niche product, at least in comparison to these other sports. But I think it can have more of an audience and tying it more directly to something that people can watch that will have many of these players in it makes more sense to me than tying it to All-Star Weekend, which is a great time for in terms of the baseball calendar, but doesn't connect to any of these particular players.
Yeah, and I feel like for the All-Star festivities, it's the time for us to focus on the best players in the game right now. So why take mm-hmm. attention away from them while looking toward the future? Like here are the best players today, and here are some of the best players 5 to 10 years from now. Like that's just not necessary to structure it that way. But the futures game is one of those things that I think if you haven't ever watched it before, you're kind of wondering, well, what's the big deal? Why is this the kind of thing that you and other evaluators travel for? Why does this matter?
It's a great question because the futures game is a double-edged sword in ways, certain ways that you can very, very much overreact to what you see and honestly what performance you get in a one-game, highly artificial sample where nobody plays the whole game anyway. So, for example, I mean, this is a showcase game. And for folks who don't follow draft stuff, what I mean by showcase game is typically like in a high school showcase game, each pitcher will come in and throw an inning. And each hitter, they try to get each hitter at least one, maybe two at-bats. That's probably it. So everyone gets a quick chance to show off some skills. I mean, do stuff beforehand, like batting practice, infield, maybe a little home run derby. But that's it. It's not a real game in any sense. No one's really trying to win. And you know, players are they're not their typical selves. Like if you tell a pitcher who's used to going 100 pitches, hey, you just got an inning. You might only throw 8 or 9 pitches. Well, of course they're going to throw harder. They're not trying to pace themselves. So for me, after, God, would this be my 16th or 17th futures game? I guess I've lost count at this point. Doesn't matter, right? Once I got to double digits, it stopped mattering. But to me, it is more just watch what comes to me, just generally, rather than bearing down on, oh, here's this guy's exact velocity each time. Just what stands out? Who looks different? But looking at bodies, just general mechanics, deliveries or swings, that's more useful to me as opposed to, you know, wow, he hit that particularly hard. Oh, wow, look at the bite on that slider. Yeah, it probably doesn't always look like that. I mean, I remember Eloy Jimenez making a great defensive play in his futures game, and he's been really bad defensively in the big leagues, like much worse than I expected. And I will say that seeing that in the futures game skewed my opinion of what he would be like on defense. How could you be that bad and make a play that involved moving that far that quickly? Well, yeah, it happens. You get it's an outlier game that's going to be full of outlier events, and it's easy to get fooled by it. Now, there are other things where I remember seeing Luke Hochaver for an inning in the futures game and saying, yeah, that's not what that should look like if you sort of, right? You're assuming everyone's going to show you a bit more in a one inning look. And it's like, that's pretty ordinary for a guy who's first overall pick, who's a starter, who's just throwing one inning. But rather than just use that to just inform my entire opinion of the player, it's like, that's a note. That's just an extra point. And now let's follow up on this. Either I see the player in his natural environment, or in most cases, talk to folks who've seen these players a lot more, to, you know, real professional scouts for other teams, and say, here's what I saw. What have you seen when you've seen him in other places, when pitching or hitting in a regular game environment, when they're playing the entire game and somebody's actually trying to win?
Yeah, I think for a lot of players that you're going to see in this game, for someone like you, it's a follow-up, maybe to check in on players you've seen before. There might be a handful of players that, just because of where they've played, logistics, you haven't seen them yet, so you get to check a few more names off the checklist and then decide if you're going to dig in some more.
That's a big thing for me, is a lot of times it's still the only place I've ever seen Jason Dominguez in person, because he's mostly played in the Florida State League, and I just don't go down. That's a bad environment for scouting to begin with, and it's not close to me. I would be flying to see. I could do it at some point, but I don't like seeing players in that league. I have seen one or two games in that league ever. It's not a good scouting environment. There's no fans. It's humid as hell. The ball doesn't travel the same way. Dominguez is going to get up to Hudson Valley and what's their double A club? Somerset, right? I will have plenty of times to see this player. But it was really nice to get just one quick look and be like, hey, they call him the Martian. What does that look like?
Yeah, Jason Dominguez, not just a hologram. He is a real player.
Right?
Showing some power, showing some speed this year currently at low A. And 30% better than league average as a hitter, even though for some people that's not good enough.
It will never be, right? There were people who were like, he's a top 10 prospect in baseball. It's like, slow down. The poor kid was... I mean, his situation, right? He's 16 with all the hype in the world and then doesn't get to play for almost 24 months from signing to first professional game because of the pandemic. And then the loss of short season baseball, I swear I'm going to make us bring this up every podcast from now until the end of time. But the fact that he didn't he would have been the perfect player to go to Staten Island when that club still existed. Something in between the Florida Man League and the complexes and full season low A. He was 18 with no experience, but they decided, and I don't disagree, he was probably too advanced for the complex league. So they had no other choice. There's no place else to send him at that point. They sent him to low A. Maybe they were trying to challenge him a little bit, and he was not great. He was fine, especially for an 18-year-old with no experience, but he wasn't the Martian. He wasn't the guy that people wanted him to be. That would have been a perfect player to go to we used to have two levels of short season between the complex league and low A. I still believe we should have one level in between, and maybe it's just for teams that want to do it. If other teams want to be cheap and not have that club, fine. But everyone who wants to have an extra affiliate between those two should have the right to do so. And I guarantee you the Yankees would do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things there. One, Staten Island to me was an underrated place to watch a game. It had an amazing view. One of the best views that I've ever seen at a ballpark.
Yep.
Underrated in that regard. It's a shame that it's not part of that league's gone, but it's not really part of baseball the same way anymore. And I start to think about the timing of when these players are drafted. Now, with the draft being pushed back, there's even less runway once a contract is signed for a player to begin his professional career before the end of the season. That seems to be a little more of a problem, right? We've lost almost a month in terms of the amount of window you have to sign and go play in the same season. So that's another downside to the way things are going right now. But as far as this futures game goes this year, players on the roster that we know of so far, this is as of Thursday morning, I'm sure eight more will come tumbling out of Twitter at some point in the next few hours. Curtis Meade from the Rays organization, Jack Leiter, Kai Bush from the Angels, Corbin Carroll, Yuri Perez, Robert Hassel, Kyle Harrison, and Seidan Rafaela from the Red Sox organization. I think of those names, Rafaela was the one that I was like, oh, what's this player all about? So I'm curious if you've seen Rafaela before and why he might be playing in this showcase game.
Yeah, I actually saw him against Kyle Harrison. He's a good prospect. He's one of these things is not like the others, right? That is him. He's having a great season. He's very undersized. He is – Marcelo Mayer should be in that spot. He was the fourth overall pick in last year's draft. He is the Red Sox top prospect. He's a top – probably a top 10 prospect in all of baseball if you consider all the graduations at this point. He should be there. Rafaela is in double A. Mayer is in low A. And I think that was the difference here. It's not to say that Rafael is totally undeserving. He's having a great year. He's a pretty interesting prospect. I think he's probably going to end up playing center field because he can really run. I got him on the worst possible day. Like, you should probably never, ever have your first look at a hitter, at a hitting prospect, be against Kyle Harrison, who struck him out three times and just could kind of like have his way with him. Anything Harrison threw Rafael, it was like, what the hell is going on here? Even with the platoon advantage, which was kind of interesting, but I also get it. Harrison's tough to see. Most, like, you just don't see a lot of pitching prospects with Harrison's stuff plus a delivery like that. And for folks who subscribe to The Athletic, I had a post that was mostly about Harrison, but where I did have a note on Rafaela. That was a week and a half ago or so that that went up. Rafaela's probably, he's got to spend the rest of the year at double A. They've moved him, aggressively because he was performing so much. I really want to see now that he's going to spend some time in double A. He's going to see a lot more pitchers who can locate their off-speed stuff and see what he does with that and what adjustments he makes. He's shown he can make adjustments so far. I'm less worried about the position he's played all over, but I think he's fast enough and athletic enough. I don't really have an issue assuming he's going to play center field. Until proven otherwise, I'm assuming he's going to be a center fielder. And they may just continue to try him in the infield, just to try to get some versatility. The one other thing I'll say too, and is I know that the folks who select the futures game rosters, even though it's no longer US versus world, they do try to get as many countries represented as possible. And he's from Curaçao. And I think he's probably going to be the only player from Curaçao or the Netherlands Antilles in general in the game this year. He's certainly the best prospect right now I can think of who's from there.
Yeah, definitely. It seems to be a push to make it a global showcase.
As they should. I'm fine with that. Especially, I will always say too, if we get a random prospect from a country that's not been represented before, yes, absolutely. Like Neverauskas, I think, didn't he appear in that game at one point?
Yeah.
He's from Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
He was fine. He was just an up and down reliever prospect, good arm. But yes, put the Lithuanian kid in the futures game. I am fine with that.
Have you seen Yuri Perez before?
I still have not. So I'm looking forward to this, right? This is exactly what you were talking about. This isn't a real scouting look, but it is a quick chance to see a body, a delivery, something of his stuff, but I have to mentally just sort of regress it backwards and say it's not always going to look like this. But I mean, I've gotten incredible reports on this guy for a year plus at this point. So I'm sure he's legit. There is just a higher confidence level, even if I'm just seeing one inning from a guy, just be like, okay, I have a mental picture now. It's always better in 3D than it is on video. I can watch all the video I want. There's no substitute for seeing a guy in person at some point. And now as he moves up too, I'll make more of an effort to go see him in person.
Yeah, if you don't know who Yuri Perez is, he's a 19-year-old pitching at AA in the Marlins organization right now. He's also 6'8", and he has four pitches and he can command them. So
he's come really quick.
It's probably a case where he's going to debut early in 2023.
And he
could be the Marlins' best starter the day he shows up, which is not a slight at anyone else. Like, that's the crazy ceiling he has. I'm probably putting a little too much on him.
I just maybe too soon, but he has that ceiling. I just feel like what we've seen from so many position players and pitchers, and you and I've talked about this, that last jump to the majors is a mother hecker.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
It seems like it's getting worse. And I think there's a related sort of topic here. I was looking at the Red Sox recent debuts, relatively recent debuts. They've had a lot of injuries in their rotation. And we kind of knew they had this high-risk group of pitchers coming into the season. The good news for them, Chris Sale might be back after the weekend. Nathan Eovaldi might be back fairly soon. James Paxton's even throwing bullpens. People kind of forget he's there. He could be back in mid-August. Yeah, maybe.
Never heard of him.
Maybe you get something from Paxton.
It's the guy from Independence Day.
who is the guy from Independence Day? I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Did you watch that this year?
No, I've never seen that movie.
Eno said he watched the sequel. I didn't know there was a sequel.
ID5?
ID2?
Neither of those works.
I don't know.
No. You know what the last movie I watched was? The final episode of Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
Which was 2.25 hours. It was awesome, though. It was great. But that's a movie. It is no longer a TV show at that point. That's a movie. They should just put it in theaters and just go get an Oscar for best metal scene in a movie this year.
I have not started Stranger Things. It is on the radar. It's probably an off-season show that I'll get into.
I really enjoy it. I'm 49. I am very much in the demographic for the nostalgia part of that show. It's set in, for folks who've never seen it, set in the 80s. And so I'm the guy who's like, I remember this song. Oh my God, that hair. Oh, those clothes. Wait, that song came out in this year and they're set in this other year and they can't do that. And my daughter's like, shut up, Dad. But yeah, but there is a very pivotal scene in the final episode that includes one of the best metal songs ever recorded that came out, I think, exactly in the year in which that's set. It was within months. Like, it was, everything about it was perfect. And also they got the timing right, which, because that's my era. Like, my formative years as a music fan were like 82 to 87 or so. So, and that's basically where the series has been set so far. So that's like right in my veins.
See, if they have more seasons and they get into the 90s, then they'll pull me in.
They said the last one's the last season. So sorry. Sorry for you youths.
I'll still enjoy it. But so Brian Baio debuted this week. And I think of all the young pitchers the Red Sox have turned to at some point this season, he's easily the most interesting. He's the most highly rated in your Red Sox prospect piece back from February, March. I forget when exactly those launched. Back in the lockout times when those pieces were coming out.
Yep.
So Baio just debuted this week. What does he bring, and how do you think they will use him throughout the second half? I mean, if the needs in the rotation change, do you think he's far enough along in his development where they could use him as a multi-inning reliever and help maybe bolster up that group of bullpen arms?
Yeah, my thought was this was just a spot start for now. And I guess if he'd come up and been utterly dominant, maybe that they would have changed the plans around him. But my assumption was this was not, like, this was never in the plans for him to be a permanent part of the rotation this year. A lot had to go wrong for them to get to this point. I think the idea all along was, and I mean, they agreed. I had him as their best pitching prospect. I believe they had him as their, you know, if you ask them internally, same thing. But it was that he's not ready. It's just all hell broke loose and he was looking really good. And therefore they just called him up at least for a spot start. What I think is just going to be a spot start for now. Because it's more stuff right now than just general feel for pitching. But he's been up to 100. It's generally a plus velocity. He's got four pitches. He's got the slider, I think, is going to end up being the real out pitch for him. And it looked pretty good in, you know, we had a handful of innings in that big league debut. But you could see it. You could see the break. It had a pretty good spin rate on it. I've always had a little bit of a reliever concern with him. Not a ton, not as much as like Brian Mata, who's now coming back from Tommy John anyway, but a guy who I was like, that's a reliever. That the big difference in the delivery is there with Baio. It's pretty close, but I lean towards starter, especially because he does have the more complete mix. I think he's got enough to, he's not had a substantial platoon split for most of his career so far. That always helps a guy. It helps me believe that a guy's got a chance to remain a starter over the long term. He's just got to work on its, you know, general command, which is, you could say that about just about every pitching prospect in the minors. And he's a guy who's, he can get a lot of hitters out, even in double A, say, with pure stuff. And that is, that just generally doesn't work in the big leagues. I mean, this came up as a draft thing. Everyone, a lot of people are enamored with this kid at Tennessee, Ben Joyce, who's a reliever who throws 105. Yeah, he'll miss some bats in the big leagues throwing 105. But you know what? He's going to throw some at 102. And as ridiculous as it sounds, big league hitters can turn that around, especially if you can't locate it or don't have enough other stuff to get guys off your fastball. And, you know, I think in Bayo's case, that's going to be the big developmental step is, you know, he's got good results in double A and triple A, but you can, I think, see the little reasons to say, yeah, this guy probably needs more time. Maybe it's more turns in triple A. I did just pull it up. He's actually, for the first time, got some platoon split this year. All of the home runs he gave up in the minors this year were to left-handed batters, which is interesting. All six. He had not shown that before this year. Maybe he needs more turns in AAA. Maybe they could bring him up and use him as a long man and say, we're just going to have you do like mop-up work, soak up some innings, not use a position player to pitch. That'd be great.
That'd be cool.
Right? Like, this is... Now I'm like turning into an old man on this rant because I've been arguing for this for a long time because this is an Earl Weaver thing from the 70s. I didn't make this up, but the idea of breaking in young pitchers, young starters, not as starters, but in long relief where you can say, hey, this is just you getting some work in and developing. We're losing 9-2. If you give up 3 runs in 2 innings, we don't care. This is part of your development. And you know, maybe that's the thing for Bayo. This is a not less specific comment. I'm getting away from Bayo because other than what we saw in the big league outing, I have not seen him in person this year. So, but for someone like that, who's got questions about fastball command, and hey, maybe there is a platoon issue to be concerned about. It's a small sample, but you know, 6 home runs, all to left-handed batters, 0 to right-handed batters, that might be meaningful. You can work that and say, hey, we're losing here. 3 of the next 4 batters are left-handed. Bring Bayo in. Here's your challenge. How are you going to get these guys out? That would be a great way to try to continue to develop him when, if he goes back to AAA, for example, yeah, he'll face plenty of left-handed batters and have to get them out, but he's going to just carve right through the right-handed batters and maybe not learn enough. Again, this is a bit of a non-specific comment because I don't know enough about Bayo, especially about what the Red Sox are doing with him. Pitchers in that general situation, though, I would be very much in favor of us seeing more of them in the big leagues. Like maybe... I've just made this up, but with all the tweaking about roster sizes, you know, everyone wants to expand the roster so we can have more pitchers, which just leads to more pitchers throwing 1 inning at a time and throwing harder and fewer balls put into play. And that's definitely like the unintended consequences of expanding the rosters. But maybe there's some like, hey, you can have a, you know, a specific spot that's for a rookie pitcher who's, that's your like designated mop-up guy or something. Maybe this is too specific. Anything to not have 3 position players pitching in the majors every single night. That stuff was cool 10 years ago. I'm over it.
I think after what I saw the Yankees do to Josh Van Meter on Wednesday, I think yeah. I'd like to just move away from position players pitching as long as we can. It's lost the novelty. The other Red Sox prospects, air quotes in some cases, Connor Siebold, Josh Winkowski have been picking up some innings. I think... Siebold had this weird outing against the Blue Jays. This would have been June 27th. He had 21 swings and misses, but they got to him. I think it was a big meltdown late in that outing. It was 7 earned runs on 9 hits over 4 2/3. Struck out 7, walked 1. Kind of a Mitch Keller vibe with that line, actually. What is going on with Connor Siebold? Is he actually someone who can be a future starter, or is he miscast right now in the role?
I have always thought he's a reliever. I've seen him back. He was a Phillies prospect. Is that the Heath Hembry trade where he ended up going to Boston?
I think that's the only trade they've made recently.
I mean, he was a third rounder. As he was, the idea, especially at the time, was polished, you know, low ceiling, but polished college starter who, if he stays in that role, shows enough. And he's a 4-pitch guy, would actually use a changeup pretty heavily. So there was more reason to believe he could stay a starter. That he would maybe move fairly quickly through the minor leagues and low ceiling, you know, 4th, 5th starter type. But there's value in that, especially in the third round. If you get a guy where you feel like it's a pretty good probability he's a major league starter, even a back end one, those guys are worth a lot of money. That's actually a pretty good outcome. And I think Siebold probably, you know, fifth starter, swingman. I lean more towards there's probably not really enough there to get to limit hard contact. I was shocked. I saw Alex Spear was tweeting about all the swings and misses. And then I look and he's also getting smoked, Seabolt, not Alex. And it's like, well, that doesn't add up at all. You know, swings and misses are great, but apparently they're not everything. Who knew? I don't even think that the stuff really supports that swing and that kind of swing and miss rate over the long term. But if it's close, could he be a fifth starter / swingman, sixth starter type? Yeah, that's probably about it. That's what I think he is. Winkowski to me is a little bit more interesting just because he's kind of outpitched expectations, mostly because it's command and control thing. And again, you know, I sort of go the other way where his can Connor Seabold give some of his swinging strikes to Winkowski, then we might really have some. Then we might have two somethings. But I'm definitely keeping more of an eye on him. I had heard Winkowski had more stuff this spring too. He was throwing a bit harder because I don't think he was even on my top 20 coming into the season because he was just a relief prospect. That's really all he was. With a bit more stuff, a bit more velocity, that makes him more interesting. Now there's a chance he could be at worst a better relief prospect, but I think a chance to be another one of these fifth starter types. That's honestly, that's what the Red Sox have a lot of right now, is these fifth starter type of prospects. Brandon Walter's kicking around. That's probably where he is. It's more of a reliever's delivery, despite the fact that he's huge. But if his two best pitches, could he go through a lineup twice, maybe as a fifth starter? Yeah, he could do that. Bayo is the one who's really different. He's got a chance to be quite a bit more. Otherwise, what the Red Sox could do is cycle a bunch of these fifth starter-ish prospects through the last spot or two in the rotation as they wait for these other guys to get healthy.
That sounds kind of familiar. Kind of sounds like something Chaim Bloom was a part of in Tampa Bay, right?
Go figure.
But I think with both Winkowski and Seabold, you look at the AAA numbers and they're really good. Great ratio, really good strikeout per inning stuff. And it comes back to the, is AAA still flawed, possibly as flawed as it was last season as a level, where the performances we saw there, I think the concern last year was more on the hitting side because so many of the pitchers that would have been there weren't actually there. But I'm at the point now where I'm wondering if we could trust anything we see at the AAA level, just given some of the strange performances we've seen really on both sides, not just these particular pitchers who are not necessarily bad, but some of the hitters that have torn up that level. We talked about Alec Burleson just a little bit at the end of last week's show, the outfielder in the Cardinals system. Will Benson, who sort of came up in passing on the Keith Law show, the Guardians outfielder, former first rounder, he appears to be putting everything together on paper. The plate discipline looks good. The power's there. The speed's there. We haven't really seen that from him before. Estevan Florial, the outfielder in the Yankees system that people were excited about a few years ago, he's having a great year at AAA. How do you feel about this level in general right now, given some of the performances we've seen now going back through last season?
Yeah, you picked three of the main names where I'm thinking, did these guys all figure it out at once at the same time? Or is something really different in AAA? Are the baseballs different? That was the case last year, right? Where they were using a different baseball in AAA in the majors than they were in AA and below. That would be my first inclination. It seems really strange that all of these guys who had pretty big swing and miss issues and a lot of pitch recognition issues are suddenly figuring it out at once in AAA, which makes me say, players change, right? Any individual player, if you said to me, hey, Will Benson figured it out this year, in the absence of any other information, I'd say, okay, sure. His was actually probably less pitch recognition and more just that poor kid just could not get to a consistent swing that seemed to work for him. Super bright kid. I think he was a Duke commit out of high school. Everyone loved the makeup and great athlete. And he was the kid where he walks up to the on-deck circle and you're like, whoa, who is that? And then he gets in the batter's box, takes a swing. You're like, oh, make it stop. He just could not get anywhere consistent. If you told me that guy started to figure it out, I'd say, oh, yeah, sure. Bet on the athletes, right? Took a long time, 6 years, seventh year, technically, if you count that first summer in pro ball. But athletic kid with great makeup, sure. Those guys do figure it out sometimes. And Cleveland's got a hell of a track record in player development so far. We talked Eric and I talked about the pitching side. They've done some pretty good things on the hitting side too. I wouldn't just discard that just because they have so much success on the pitching side. But when it's Benson and Florial and Burleson. And there was one other one I noticed recently where it's like the same thing. It was like, he was not good in AA and suddenly he's way better in AAA. Just makes me wonder, is there something systemic going on here that we need to take into account? Doesn't mean these guys aren't good, right? But do we have to sort of regress back what we're thinking about these players? Because a bunch of them are taking steps forward. And if it is the different baseball that, for example, you know, breaking stuff isn't breaking the same way, spinning the same way, we just need to know that to properly evaluate some of these players who look like they are superficially at least taking big steps forward in AAA.
Yeah, it just left me at a point where I'm very skeptical of AAA performances in general. And we've got a guy, Jared Kelnick, is back at AAA right now. He's been there for 37 games this year, so he's actually spent a little more time in Tacoma this year than he did last year in a couple of stints. The line looks good. It's a 289, 339, 547 line, which for Tacoma is not quite as eye-popping as it might seem on the surface. 8 homers, 3-for-3 as a base stealer, but he's got a 28.1% K rate. He's still striking out a lot, and that is a problem if we're looking at this level as one that's just not what it used to be. And if you strike out 28% of the time at AAA, you're going to strike out 35% of the time in the big leagues, given the difference in the quality of the pitching, right? I mean, is it possible, though, that when we're talking about Kelnick, what he's trying to do is just earn a return to Seattle on every single swing, and he's basically giving up plate discipline in the process while trying to just hit rockets all the time?
I mean, that's my guess. And if you watch some of the highlights too, it kind of looks like it. He's also had some swings too where he's looks like the Jared Kelenic who was a top 10 prospect in all of baseball, where he's staying back on the ball better and trying to use the whole field. That guy's still in there. It is like, I don't think he's suddenly forgotten how to make consistent contact, but I think he has also pretty clearly changed parts of his approach where he is now, for lack of a better term, accepting more swing and miss in his game to try to get more results on balls in play. I don't think that's going to serve him well in the long term. And I don't know what there is. Seattle, he's also been hurt right here, hamstring thing a couple weeks ago. So there was, you know, there, I think there may have been an opportunity to call him up recently when they just ended up not doing it. That could have also been the injury rather than the performance. But if you're Seattle, how could you possibly say to that player, yeah, we're going to call you back up when you're doing more of the thing that led us to demote you in the first place? And Kelenic has a reputation for being pretty hard on himself as a player. And if he is, you know, on the one hand, I guess maybe if he's striking out at a higher rate and he's learning to accept it, that's good exposure therapy for him. On the other hand, it's the one thing you would really like to see him cut down on. He's facing AAA pitching, which, as we just talked about, lots of hitters have actually cut their strikeout rate going from AA to AAA. Now he's coming down, but for a guy who just faced a bunch of major league pitchers, AAA pitching should look easier. You would expect a big drop in the strikeout rate for somebody who's been demoted. Whether it doesn't matter where, anywhere in the minors, you move down a level, you should perform better because you're suddenly facing much weaker competition than what you'd been facing before. So I'm still a Kelenic believer in the long term. The tools are there across the board, and he does have the history of performance really up until he got to the major leagues. However, I don't love what I'm seeing right now. I thought he'd go down to AAA and mash, and then we'd just say, yeah, okay, but can he replicate this in the big leagues? Now going down to AAA and performing on contact, but swinging and missing like this, striking out at this rate, I should say, it's not great. It's certainly not what you want to see.
That being said, if he turned it around for a month and got the K rate down and kept hitting the way he's hitting right now, I could see that being enough to quickly put him back on the big league roster. I mean, the long-term decision they could make with him with the trade deadline approaching is, hey, we've got Julio Rodriguez. We got a superstar who can play center field. We made the trade to get Jesse Winker. Taylor Trammell is good enough to be an everyday player. I don't have any issue with that. I mean, if you use him as a fourth outfielder and play him more than a typical fourth outfielder, that can work too. They have an option. They actually could trade Jared Kelnick if there are still teams interested in trading for him. And based on what you said, you'd still be interested in trading for him if you were a team looking for young outfield help.
Yep, absolutely. 100%. I still think he'd have pretty significant trade value. I think a lot of teams would be very interested in, see him as a buy low candidate. And, maybe Seattle ends up trading him for, 80 cents on the dollar, so to speak. But I think you're not giving this guy away. I'm sure a lot of teams, you know, the Pittsburghs of the world, the teams that are just not contending right now. Actually, God, Pittsburgh has an outfielder of their own. They would potentially trade. I don't know. That's really a fit for Seattle. But a team like that that can just say to Kelenic, you're coming up and you're playing the rest of the year. Don't worry about it. You don't have to, you don't have to fight to keep your spot. This is a long-term thing. This job is yours. Just go play. That may be the best thing for him too. I don't know. I'm projecting a little bit on, maybe overthinking, is this a pressure situation for Kelenic where he's just trying to mash his way back to the big leagues. He was trying too hard in the big leagues. I don't know. But to take a player like that, like I think this is a traditional thing. You take a player like that who scuffled a little bit in first big league exposure, especially last year, they were very much in a pennant race. Send him to a place where there's no pressure for a year or two. Sure. Could absolutely see that. And I wouldn't criticize Seattle for doing it because, as you said, Julio Rodriguez is a legit center fielder, a really good center fielder. I don't know if it was us or we were recently talking about Julio Rodriguez can really freaking run.
Yeah.
I don't know how a man that big moves that fast. Him and O'Neill Cruz should have a race.
Superstar. Julio Rodriguez trending towards superstar.
Absolutely.
And it's really fun to watch.
You go back to my preseason top 10 or 11 or so. I forget where Cartaya was exactly. But there's like six guys in there who seem like they're on track towards superstardom. That's pretty good, actually. Not for me. I'm not talking about my list. I'm saying the group of prospects. Good job, Keith. No, that this group of prospects, a bunch of these guys are already heading towards superstardom. And there's still guys like Francisco Alvarez and Diego Cartaya who are in that group who are hitting in the minors like future superstars as well. So we may have – this was one hell of a crop of prospects this year.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Here's a question that's been bouncing around. You brought up Francisco Alvarez. He's up at AAA now. Again, what is he really going to learn there, given the limitations of the level? But the Mets offense, Tim Britton wrote about this a week ago, it's a good offense that doesn't hit home runs. Francisco Alvarez should hit home runs, and catcher is one of the spots in that lineup they could pretty easily get an offensive upgrade if they were to bring him up. Yep. Do you think Francisco Alvarez comes up and plays a significant role for the Mets at some point in the second half and possibly into the postseason?
Everything I've heard about him, I haven't seen him this year. I saw him last year. I've talked to scouts who've seen him this year. Everyone thinks he's going to hit. Like, the bat is absolutely real, but that the catching is not great. I'm not hearing, oh, he can't catch. It's more like he's going to be an offensive catcher. That's not the guy I think you bring up in a pennant race, especially when you hope your pitching staff has DeGrom and Scherzer. I mean, they got stuff guys in that rotation too. You take, you know, I've seen Alvarez. I think he can stay as a catcher, but there's going to be some work to do back there, even on some of the routine stuff. You don't bring him up to catch a rotation with some guys who have premium stuff and stuff that moves a lot. You know, also Scherzer might just tear him to pieces. You never know if he. I love how we all talk about Max Scherzer like he's some kind of monster, and then you read like all the stuff he did for the guys when he was on rehab, where he bought them all, right? Didn't he buy them a meal and bought everybody AirPods and all this stuff? Like, obviously he's a great guy, but because of the way he pitches, we assume he is some kind of like mass murderer on the mound or something. It is kind of funny to me because this is clearly not who he actually is. He might be the guy who takes Alvarez aside and says, hey, let's work on some stuff, but we've sort of got this idea of Scherzer as like, no, I'm going to rip your head off type of guy.
When you're watching players either in person or on TV, and you see and even hear sometimes, you hear things watching baseball games. The Jared Kelnick example would be, I've heard multiple F-bombs on the feed.
Yes.
Watching him after a strikeout. I'm like, okay,
he needs a 7-second tape delay.
This guy's tightly wound, and it's okay. It's the competitive drive gets you there. Being intense gets you to the big leagues in the first place, but is there a way to see things like that, reactions like that, and say that might be a little bit of a concern? Like, this guy's dealing with failure and not handling it particularly well, or is it just some people wear their emotions on their sleeves and other people walk back to the dugout quietly, basically screaming in their own head, and you just can't see it or hear it on their face?
Yeah, that's. I worry a little bit about drawing too much of a conclusion from what we see like that, but when it's not nothing, right? Being a little tightly wound, it can cut both ways, right? It can make you be more competitive, and more being a little hard on yourself can be a good thing because it drives you to keep improving and keep developing. Being hard on yourself to the point where it gets in the way of your performance or your way of your ability to just make adjustments is not a good thing. And so I just get a little wary of drawing too much of a conclusion. This is a bit of a narrative we're constructing around Kelenic. That might be true. Is he so hard on himself that it is preventing him from improving / making adjustments in the big leagues especially? I would say that's possible. That's something we should consider going forward. I don't know for sure if that's true, but that's something I would keep in mind. Did I answer the Alvarez question? I don't think we see him catching significant games in the big leagues. That was my answer. And then we kind of ended up, I drove us off the road there.
Maybe universal DH ends up being the kind of thing that lets him get some plate appearances down
right,
the stretch.
The bat could help.
Yeah, that could be one way they do it.
He could really hit. Really
I also
hit.
Think it'd be surprising if the Mets didn't add something to the offensive position player group at the trade deadline. I don't know if it's going to be a big player or if it's just going to be another role player to give more depth, but I would be really surprised if they only added to the bullpen or only added some rotation depth, some insurance behind Scherzer and DeGrom in case injuries happen to strike one of those guys again. One more player I want to talk about today is Wander Franco. Always interesting, always fun to talk about, fun to watch. And we're 126 games into his big league career, still talking about a guy who turned 21 back in March. So, yeah, could be playing at high A right now, and it wouldn't be a problem if he were a normal 21-year-old, but he's Wander. So we have to put him under the microscope. And so far, 11.3% for the K rate, really good K rate for a player this young, 12 homers, 7 steals combined over the last two seasons, a 4.7% barrel rate, though. And barrel rate's not everything, but barrel rate is important. It's hitting the ball hard at the right angles. And for a guy that projects to be an eventual star, feel like you need to see more. But at the same time, we wouldn't really know what his barrel rate was if he were in a normal situation. If he were in high A or double A, we wouldn't have access to it publicly to look at it and scrutinize it. So is this a big deal, or is this just the kind of thing that it's a young player finding his way, and given the age, it's much too early to even look at this as anything more than a footnote in who Wander Franco currently is as a player.
Yeah, and I think part of the issue is that he's not hitting the ball quite enough in the air, rather than, like, he's hitting plenty of balls hard.
Yeah.
He's not getting into – so for, I don't want to assume everyone knows what a barrel is, but it is a – there's a specific definition from MLB, which is basically balls that are hit with a certain combination of exit velocity and launch angles, the angle at which the ball leaves the bat, that is very likely to produce it's extra base hits or really – but you know, it's very high-quality contact that produces overall – it's this some slugging percentage or the threshold that it has to pass. So basically, if you get a barrel, you've probably hit a double or more. Pretty good chance. That's probably, a decent lay explanation of what it is without getting into the specific criteria. So it's some combination. There's no perfect, right? There's a range of launch angle. The harder you hit the ball, the more tolerance there is on what the launch angle can be to still qualify as a barrel. He's hitting the ball hard. His high-end exit velocities are up there, and his average exit velocity is not that far. It's a little bit below the major league median. For a 21-year-old, it's probably okay, but his max exit velocities are up there, and he's doing that enough that I think he can that's not really the concern. I think a little bit of it is his swing can just be a little bit flat or has been a little bit flat, and so he is often falling short of – of course, I'm demonstrating with my hand. This is really useful on a podcast. I think he's falling below the launch angle range, the sort of cone of acceptable launch angles. That worries me less just from talking to people around the game, especially people in the player development side who kind of consistently have said to me, that's something we can work on. It's much easier to get a guy to hit the ball in the air a little more than it is to get him to hit the ball hard. And so that I'm much less worried as opposed to if Franco say it was the opposite, consistently hitting with the right angle, but not hitting the ball hard enough. Yeah, he's only 21, but you should be doing it some of the time.
Yeah. Looking at the max exit velocity leaderboards, the raw power, which is it's a good indicator of like the hardest you can hit a ball right now, Wander's at 112.4, which means nothing by itself. But with context, Manny Machado has a max exit velocity this season that is exactly the same. Paul Goldschmidt within 0.1 mph. Freddie Freeman sitting right there. Those guys have plenty of power. The difference between Wander and those players is the average launch angle. You can see it on the same leaderboard. Wander's at a 6.6 degree average launch angle. All those other players are in double digits. Freeman's at 14.1, Goldschmidt's at 16.7, Machado's at 15.1, just for the extra context. So I think it's really interesting that I would agree with this just from a logical perspective. It makes more sense to me that it's easier to change your launch angle than it is to hit the ball harder, because hitting the ball hard, I think, is the function of mainly two things: your actual physical strength, which generates your bat speed, but then the precision of where you hit the ball.
Yeah, got to square it up.
There's a hit tool aspect of power, and I think Wander pretty clearly has that. A player this young doesn't hit the ball this often and have this many batted balls over 95 plus. He's in the 37-38% range for his hard hit rate. You don't do that if you don't have the ability to square the ball up. That just doesn't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. So it's just a question of when. How long is it going to take? It takes every player a different amount of time to make adjustments like this. But if you told me today that Wander Franco in 2024 is going to pop 30 home runs, I'm not going to argue against you, even though it's hard to see it right now. I think he shows all the traits you would look for in a player that can make the adjustments and get to that level.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I will throw out pure speculation, but also could this be an example of a very talented hitter who is saying, I'm going to focus on contact, and who is just, because this is not a huge difference either in launch. It's not like he's pounding the ball into the ground or hitting it consistently too high. He's just a little bit below that ideal range. Is this I'm going to be just a line drive hitter right now, put the ball in play a lot, get my results that way. And you know, every once in a while gets into one, you know, okay, now I get my pitch, I get into the proper count. I wouldn't say that for every hitter. I would not say that probably for a lot of hitters. I happen to believe Franco is that good of a hitter, that instinctive of a hitter, that I think he could make that adjustment. If that turned out to be the explanation, which we'll really only know over the course of time too, if we start to see that the launch angle kind of creep up as he gets a little older, a little stronger, a little more experienced. But if it turned out that was the explanation, that would fit. I wouldn't say that for a lot of guys, but Franco has always been that kind of like really exceptional hitter in terms of pitch recognition, understanding of the count, his just general approach to at-bats. And I think his ability to kind of manipulate the barrel a little bit to get good quality contact. That wouldn't shock me if that's where we turned out to be. I think the thing you said at the top of this little segment here was spot on. This is a 21-year-old. He's younger than some guys who are going to be drafted in 2 weeks out of college. We wouldn't even have this data on him if he wasn't so exceptional. If anyone is worried about Wander Franco, I don't know that anybody actively is. It's probably somebody out there, because there always is. Hang in there. I don't know anybody who thinks Wander Franco is going to be anything other than a superstar. If there is somebody who exists out there, they're staying very, very quiet. I mean, like people in the industry, not like Johnny Bunch of Numbers on Twitter.
Johnny Bunch of Numbers, good friend of Frankie Bag of Donuts.
Yes.
Wander, I mean, for a 21-year-old, is that a $182 million contract? Major league teams don't give players that young that much money, like, ever. I'm not an appeal to authority sort of guy, but this is just like, I don't think a very smart team makes that commitment if they don't think that he's going to be worth double or triple that over the life of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to do that. They had him under club control for 5 more years when he got that deal.
Yeah. I mean, look, every club, even the smartest clubs, have made mistakes. I agree with you. I would be willing to give the Rays more benefit of the doubt. And also, by the way, if this is what Wander Franco turns out to be forever, it's probably still a good contract for the team.
Yeah. Yeah. 3-4 win player. Yeah. Year over year. Good defense up the middle. Yeah, that'll play.
That'll play.
He's got 2 swings too, Keith. He's a switch hitter. Like, that's the other thing that could make this take a little longer. You got to adjust from both sides.
They signed that contract hoping this guy was going to be a 7-8 win player for a few years. I still think he'll get there.
I think that's a very reasonable place to be, even with the barrel rate where it is right now. We need to go. Before we go, I will let you know you can get a subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month for the first 6 months. Get that deal while you still can. That'll get you everything that Keith is going to write about the MLB draft, stuff that was written already, all of our coverage for all the major sports. Of course, if you're an NBA fan, free agency, that's underway. Of course, there's hockey draft happening right now. We're covering all of it. One low price, $1 a month for the first 6 months. TheAthletic.com/baseball show. On Twitter, Keith is at Keith Law. I am at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Monday. Have a great weekend.